This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another, what I will say is a wonderful episode, even though we technically haven't recorded it yet. It will be wonderful, of Adults with Books. I am one half of your duo here, Miranda, and of course, I am always joined by my lovely host, Bianca.
Hello!
How are you doing over there?
I'm good. We are, I think, hopefully, knock on all the wood, I think we are done with the cold weather in Florida, and I am super excited.
I think we might be, which, listen, we all know Europe, America, it doesn't matter. It's the time of year where everybody might get, like, one more, like, gust of cold where you're like, really?
Yeah.
But I think we're on the up. Apparently, February, according to weather reports, was the warmest February in Czech Republic since 1961.
Good grief.
I know. I was very excited about that.
It's because you're there, Miranda. That's why.
It's me. Well, you know what? When I moved to Slovakia, I brought the tornadoes. So I guess I brought the warm here. I don't want the tornadoes, though. They were... I think I've talked about that before, but I want to say it was like 50 years or more they had not had a tornado. And then when all of our big American group moved to Slovakia, within like 8 months of us all arriving, like there were really bad tornadoes.
It's the American curse.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. Yeah, my toxic trait. So today it was the high was 53 with the sun shining. And so to me, that means I must have a pastry and a tea on the patio with my clothes hanging on my clothes rack because I am totally European now. And that's what I did.
Hey, that sounds great.
It is. We dry it. We hang dry a lot of clothes. That's a very European thing.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I took my rack outside and I set it on the porch and I pulled out my table and chairs that I've had in the garage because, you know, you leave stuff like that out and it just gets damaged with all the snow. So, yeah. I sat there on my little table and listened to my F1 podcast, watched my husband cook over an open fire, and drank my tea and ate my pastry.
Well, we have had, it's been like nothing but rain for 4 days. And then yesterday, it was just fog. It was like we were living in Silent Hill all day.
Oh, I hate that. We have a lot of days like that.
And then it was super foggy this morning, but the fog finally rolled out around like 10:30, 11. I was like, oh, I'm going to go for a walk and soak up the sun. So I did. And it was like 75 degrees. And I was like, oh, I am dying because there is no breeze.
I don't want 75. I want that sweet spot. 62, 67. That's my sweet spot.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's like not hot enough that like without a breeze, you're dying. But it's not cold enough that you're like, I can't do this.
Well, segueing into our first, what do you call this? Not category. What's the word I'm looking for? Whatever. I don't know. It'll right? come back. It'll come to me in like 45 minutes. Anyways.
My brain literally, you asked me and I literally just like stared at a point on the wall and was like,
segment.
That's the word. I was like, topic?
Our first segment for book news and social media. This is a great podcast already.
It is, actually. It is. We're fantastic.
I wanted to talk about something that I discovered since we last recorded, and it's a website called Pango Books. And it's basically like eBay, but for books.
Yeah.
Everyone goes on there and they sell their used books. There are a few new ones, but like 99% of them are used books. And then there's also like creators. So like I see like stickers and patches and like various book merch.
The various book merch part is actually extremely new.
Oh, is it?
Really cool. Mm-hmm. Because I don't remember Miranda, any of that being on there.
Miranda knew about this. I had no idea this existed. I was just scrolling on TikTok and they were like, check out Pengo Books. And I was like, yeah. I sure will. What is this?
You could get some really good prices. Like, I have a cousin that is currently working his way through the collection. His son was like, hey, I want to collect all the R.L. Stine Goosebumps books. And my cousin was very curious and he wants to, I don't know if you, again, I'm not saying you're that much younger than me, but changes happen like within 2 or 3 years, right? I don't know if they still did this when you were in school, but do you remember on the spine of the actual Goosebumps book, there was a very specific way in the 90s that it would say Scholastic, which is much different than it does now. So they refer to those as like the original, I guess. I don't know if they mean like original printing, but that's what he's trying to collect specifically, is the ones that have this very specific, where Scholastic is done a very specific way. And he has actually been able to get a bunch on Pengo Books for like $2.50.
I'm actually impressive. Looking at one of the Goosebumps books. It's on the front page here. It's Phantom of the Auditorium. It's on sale for $2.50.
See? Perfect. It's much like if you guys used to buy used books or still do buy used books from Amazon or eBay, where it tells you like the condition, the format, how long ago. Actually, this one tells you what state it shipped from, what the publication date of the book was, and how long ago this book was even listed. I will say I had a few books listed on there when I still had access to like American shipping ways. And I wasn't a huge, this is over about a year ago. I think I found them about a year and a half ago. I wasn't a huge fan of trying to list items on the app.
Okay.
It was both easy and really dumb at the same time. Easy in the sense of like you can take a picture of the barcode and you can tell it knows like that book, and then you pick the condition. But then it wanted you to do this thing where you pick tags, like what tags you think that book would be attached to.
Yeah. That's just to help make it more discoverable.
Right. And it's kind of like using a hashtag on any social media, but it was like really frustrating trying to pick like what you thought would work. That was irritating.
Yeah, because it's also subjective.
Exactly. It's kind of like the whole discussion of what's a classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I only ordered myself one book. I only sold one book. I didn't have a whole lot listed on there, so I'm not like, I only sold one book. Payment was really quick. I was worried that you would have to like hold it and cash out like at a certain dollar amount, and I didn't have to. I think I actually just used the money and immediately bought another book. But yeah, I didn't know you hadn't heard of it. And when you first put it on our sheet for us to talk about, I thought maybe there's something had happened. I was like, oh no, what happened?
No, this is just new in the world of Bianca.
Yeah. They have some really cool programs that I've read, but obviously I haven't used them too much with having a European address, but you can earn like 5% back when you buy books. So I guess it's like a rewards program. You can have, like, they offer free shipping codes sometimes. And like Bianca said, I didn't know they did this, but apparently there is merch. I do see it. I see some Sarah J. Maas and some Throne of Glass stickers.
I've got Fourth Wing stickers.
I'm not even logged in, and the algorithm, because it's like, this is what we think you would like. And you are right. You are right. You are right. You're right. You're right. Right. Right.
Well, Miranda, update us on your library that you've got going on for your village.
I sure will. So like I said before, I wasn't going to mention it because I thought it was tooting your own horn. But then I was like, well, who's going to toot your own horn better than yourself? So let's do this. I can't remember what all I told you guys. I think I remember telling you I was going to have the meeting, correct? Well, you know, I tell you everything, but I mean,
I believe you told the boys and girls that you went and had your picture taken kind of against your will.
Oh, it was yes. And what's funny is the photo came out and like went live one night when Bianca and I were recording. Like I literally got off recording with you and I was like, oh my God, Bianca, look at this.
You sent me a screenshot. You were like, why do I look like this?
Well, I was like, okay, listen, in my defense, they had two cameras, one on an iPad and one someone's iPhone. And I didn't know which one I was supposed to be looking at. And I have an eye contact issue sometimes where like I struggle and you're like, look here. And my eyes look to the other way because it's like you told me what to do. like I can hold eye contact with a person. It's just in certain situations, my eyes are like, nope. And I walked down to the library, which is not a long walk. It literally is like 4.5-5 minutes from my house walking, but I had 27 books on my back. I'm like, can we take your picture? And I'm like, oh, okay. So they were really happy about it, got super excited. One of the ladies is a huge Agatha Christie fan, and she saw an Agatha Christie in there because it was a double copy for me. And she was like, oh, can I take this? Can I read this? And I was like, well, that's why I brought them, for you guys to, like, do you want an English section? Do you want to, like, just, like, give these away? Like, what do you want to do? So we now have an English section at our library. I haven't gone to see it yet, because I'm embarrassed. I don't want to look like a mother following her kid to kindergarten, okay?
Understandable.
But I really got to thinking about it because they were just so excited. And I was like, well, 27, and it's kind of like what I gave them was an array of things, but also kind of curated in the sense of like, it's very Miranda in taste.
Yeah.
Clearly for my books. So I went to Facebook to my friends and was like, hey, so I did this thing and I would like donations if you have that, if you can spare that, whatever that is. And I'm going to just go buy books, more books, and I'm really going to increase the English section at the library. I am very pleased to say I have a few more people that have said they would like to donate but have to wait till a certain time, and that's completely understandable. But as of right now, I have been given $450.
Ooh.
I know. I was completely blown away by a lot of people's generosity. I had some people that I haven't talked to in a while, and they were like, hey, what's your Venmo? And they just spit $50 at me. And I was like, what? Like, oh my gosh. So far I've taken 120, and I've purchased a decent stack of books. But then I stopped because I realized like these are books that I think they would want, because one of the questions they asked me is, were there any children's books or like kid, like middle grade books? And I had very few. So I went, and a lot of the money that I spent were things that we considered required reading in America or mid grade books. And then I also grabbed 2 Colleen Hoovers because I feel like she's worldwide popular.
Yeah.
So I thought I bought one of her, like actual romance books, and then I bought Verity. You have to buy Verity. And then I bought a Stephen King because I found out my friend that is my neighbor that helped like facilitate this whole thing, she loves Stephen King. So I thought even if she chooses not to read the book in English, she speaks English, but you know, I don't know if you speak a second language and try to read in it, sometimes it's really hard. So I like kind of like, for her, like if she decides to check it out and read it, fantastic. If she doesn't, like I bought it with her in mind that she can be like, tell other people like, oh, this is my favorite book, go read it. So I bought The Green Mile from Stephen King. The first 2 Percy Jacksons, Fahrenheit 451, an Edgar Allan Poe collection. I forget what else, but like I bought a couple of different things that I thought would be a good addition. And then, like I said, I've stopped. So I still have about $330 left. I have, my friend's kids are going to go to school because they go to the village school. I say that like people probably think it's just like one room. It's actually a very big building. It's a huge building. But they go to the school here instead of going out to like one of the bigger cities to go to school. And they're going to go talk to their friends and be like, what would you want to read in English? And then the library is going to be putting out a poll in some manner. I don't know how they're going to do it, asking people if you read in English, what books would you want to see? So that I'm not just like buying things that I think people would want to read.
That's so, good, yeah. Though.
Yes, I'm very excited. So, and $330 is a lot left, really. I'm getting very lucky because, like, the Percy Jacksons were, like, €7 a piece, which...
Yeah.
I'm buying everything in paperback, and that's my other thing. I also wanted to stop. I wanted to ask them, like, would you prefer hardback? Like, I mean, libraries do paperback, but, like, if they prefer hardback, I'd rather invest in that avenue.
Did so, they yeah, not give a preference?
They really haven't yet, so I don't know if they're just trying to decide what's better. I hope they're not thinking they would offend me by saying, like, I actually really would prefer hardback, you know? So right now I've gotten paperbacks, but they seem pretty excited. So, yeah. If you want to donate, you're not required. That's not why you're here, but I have more time to buy more books, so... I even told people if they wanted to tell me a specific book that they think should be part of the, within reason, obviously, because if somebody tells me something off the wall, I'm going to be like, that's probably the, it'd have to be within reason.
Yeah. Understandable.
Yeah. So that's my update. I'm actually very proud of this. I didn't expect this to happen. So, I don't know. It makes me... So good. And also, I had one negative comment I want to address really quick. I wasn't going to, but I think I'm going to. I had someone message me anonymously from like a dead Facebook account. And so I don't know who it was, but shame on you. And they were like, way to force Western culture. And I was like, okay, I'm not into entertaining. And I guarantee you they don't listen to us here. So that's the only reason why I decided to bring it. I didn't entertain them, or as Jerry says, like, don't, he's like, don't engage the stupid is what he tells me when somebody says something. I didn't, but I just want to say the reason I decided to do this for anyone that may possibly be feeling that way, I'm not trying to force English on anyone. I'm actually in the process of learning Czech, and every Czech citizen I come across that's like, you're trying to learn, that's really awesome, but just so you know, English is easier. And I'm like, I appreciate that, but I'm trying to give it my best effort, number one. And number two, English is actually compulsory for them to learn here, in our village and many others. So I just thought I was helping them with what they're required to learn. So I'm not trying to force Western anything on my tiny little village, for sure.
Well, not like, to mention that the librarians themselves are like super happy you're doing this.
Oh, so. Yeah. She was so excited. Like one of the books was a Greek mythology book that we had purchased for Caden to do a research paper. And she was like, oh, my, the one librarian, she does speak English, but she's not confident in her English speaking. Like, I'm not confident in my Czech speaking. So the other librarian was talking for the both of us, like, back and forth. And she ended up taking that one home. They're going to put it back in the library, but she took that one home to her son. And the librarian that does speak English was like, her son is studying Greek mythology right now in his class. And he's also in English, so this would be perfect for him. So, like, both of them genuinely seemed excited. I think if I had presented this idea and they weren't excited or were like, we'll think about it, then this would have never happened because that would have felt like pushing to me.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, to you, madam and or sir, that was very rude of you. And I am not trying to force my Western ways on anyone. But thanks. For your concern? Okay. I was like, ooh, scandals. It did hurt my feelings. Oh, a lot. I'm one of those people. I get my feelings hurt, especially when I think I'm doing something good. And I got like a little mad. You know me. I cry when I'm mad. So I was like, I had some tears and I was like, oh, that's fighting words. Then I calmed down and I was like, scandalous.
No, I'm with your husband. Don't feed the stupid or whatever it was he said.
Yeah, he says sometimes don't feed the stupid. And that's usually in reference to if I say something and somebody says something stupid back. And then if I come across something that I think is totally stupid, instead of me engaging, he'll be like, don't engage the stupid. So yeah, fun little update there for you. And I guess lesson as well. Don't feed or engage the stupid boys and girls. Because there's a lot of it out there.
Well, some things that we are going to feed are adaptations. We have quite a few that have been announced in the past month. The first one that I came across was romantic comedy. Got greenlit with Hello Sunshine, which is Reese Witherspoon's production company. And, of course, romantic comedy was one of her book club picks. So I guess now I'm going to have to read it.
I was going to say, I know you and I have both read a decent amount of her book club picks, but that one I wasn't familiar with.
It was sometime last year it was picked.
Oh, okay.
So we got that one. Little White Lies by Jennifer Lynn Barnes has been optioned with the company Whip. Which Whip has done another one that we're going to mention, and I had to look it up. Whip is like an independent production company, basically. Their tagline is, I want to say it correctly, giving artists the freedom to create the extraordinary.
Well, and when I first saw this, am I wrong, or hasn't this been adapted already?
No, you're thinking of, what's the name of that book? You're thinking of the one with Nicole Kidman.
That's The Fires Everywhere, isn't it?
No, that's Reese Witherspoon.
That is Reese. Oh, well, I know. There's a documentary apparently called Little White Lie. We won't talk about that.
Because I actually started watching whatever it is. That Big Little Lies.
Big, okay, that's where the confusion was. Okay, yes, I know what you're talking about now.
So Little White Lies is a YA, it's a YA book. Mm-hmm. I probably just put it in regular fiction, but it's about teenage girls and drama and lying.
So it's like Pretty Little Liars?
I don't know, I never did Pretty Little Liars, but I did read Little White Lies. There is a second one. I didn't read the second one because the first one was just kind of meh for me, but I am excited to see how it will translate to screen.
That's interesting. It's one that I've been interested in, so that's for sure. And then this production company has another thing coming out that you and I both saw, and you're like, I'm already on it. And you've read this book. That's why I sent you this. And you're like, saw it. I'm on it.
It is Babel, everyone's favorite literary research paper. That's what I like to call it. Because it literally
reads like a research paper. It's very academic, is it not?
Yes. It literally reads like a research paper.
See, and that is what keeps holding me back from reading it. Because every time I see it at the bookstore, I pick it up and I'm like, I'm going to do it. And then I'm like, oh, but everybody calls it the research paper. And I feel like my ADHD brain would not enjoy that.
Like there are footnotes, quite a few footnotes.
Maybe this is a definite audio for me then.
It was a really good story. I really enjoyed the story. It's by R.F. Kuang, the same one who did Yellowface and what was her other one? Here's another one I read. The brain is just not braining today.
Brain doesn't brain. I'll look. Yellowface.
Anyways, it also got optioned with Whip. Oh, the Poppy War.
Poppy War, that's it.
And then I'll let you talk about the other two, Miranda.
So one of them I knew was a book, and I'd wanted to read it, but I did not know they had made it into a television show. It's called Sanctuary, A Witch's Tale. It was done by AMC Sundance. It was heavy. Let me just go ahead and say that. I give it all the stars that I could possibly give you. But it was extremely heavy. So My understanding is that it follows the book. I'm trying to pull this back up. I'm sorry. My page went away. It follows the book pretty closely from my understanding. But the very vague premise that I came across, of course, I was like, a witch's tale. Well, that makes sense. And it just said, a small UK town named Sanctuary is shaken by murder accusations after a boy is discovered dead from an accident. And I was like, okay, how's this going to go? It is only like 7 episodes. They're right at an hour long. Pretty quickly, things get like crazy. And eventually what happens through the whole, it's a retelling on the persecution of witches, essentially, and the persecution of like people that are different in general. And with, it doesn't like spoil or give anything away, but like at the very beginning, everyone loves her. Everyone loves this lady. And then when things start getting dug up about the young man's death and they start questioning, like, could a witch have done this? Was it not really an accident? The whole town essentially turns against the person that they once loved, and they're doing really crappy things. But there's also discussion of sexual assault, domestic violence in teenage relationships. Obviously, persecution of any group is hard to see. But it was... It was actually done by American Television, AMC, but the whole thing is set in a very small UK town. This is the first time that I ever went ahead and watched something that a book had been based on a book and not decided to read the book first. But I will be going back and reading the book now. Again, like it was heavy, but I devoured this show in like 2 days. It just came out in January.
Is it just called Sanctuary by, who's the author?
Let me.
Because you said it was in a UK town, and the book that I thought it was based on, it says it takes place in Connecticut. So I was like, wait, do I have the right book?
No, well, in the movie, it's in a fictitious UK town. I want to say that maybe I did read in the book. It's called Sanctuary. So I have it on my list. Let me see. Goodreads is not being helpful. And by the way, do you guys know how many books are named Sanctuary in the world?
A lot. That's why I was like, do I have the right one?
I know when I went to like add it to my list, I was like, excuse me, this is unacceptable. I just added it recently, so I'll pull that up. Want to read. But yes, I highly recommend the show, so I'm hoping that the book is just as good. Yeah.
I might have to look that up.
Think.
Or is it not a Bianca show?
No, I think you would be okay. Like I said, there's a heavy plot point is the essay that takes place.
Oh, okay.
At some point. And it's also dealing with like that young lady being believed.
Yeah.
Or not believed, which I some people are gonna be like, you're spoiling everything. I'm actually not. You can read all this anywhere online. So I don't know why. So the book, sometimes I hate
technical issues.
No, I really am. Like the page is just spinning and spinning and spinning, and I'm like, why are we doing this? So this is based on the novel by the same name by V.V. James.
Okay, that was right then.
Okay, yes. So obviously they made some changes, but
my understanding from the reviews I saw is it's still pretty, because it's I think both ways, it's still a fictitious town. And you said yours says it's in New England?
In Connecticut.
In Connecticut, yeah. So in New England area. So it's kind of a similar vibe then. It's like a little ocean town. It's just in the UK. Okay. So.
And then there's one more. This could technically go in book news or adaptation minute.
Yeah.
But
I feel like it's leaning towards telling us that we're going to have some sort, or we potentially could have an adaptation, which is why I added it here.
But evidently, Margot Robbie and Sarah J. Maas have been seen out and about together. I saw one clip of them at a little coffee shop.
Yeah, they seem. The thing I saw was the same thing, kind of like they're having coffee, but you can tell by the conversation, and it's not that it's not friendly, but it seems business in tone.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm overreading this. Maybe we're all of the SJM girlies overreading it, which, just so you guys know, don't come for Bianca. She's not an SJM girly. So don't be sending her all the SJM stuff, okay? It's me.
Which, and that is okay. Isn't her stuff already in development with, was it Hulu?
But that doesn't necessarily mean that Margot Robbie couldn't be taking some sort of, well, not all of her stuff is in development at Hulu. I think it's just been part, I think it was just a court of the
ACOTAR?
Was it ACOTAR? I think just ACOTAR is what has been optioned at Hulu. Let me just, I just Google SJM Hulu. So it is. It's ACOTAR is apparently in development of developing ACOTAR. But doesn't Margot Robbie do some directing?
I mean, she directed the Barbie movie.
Right. So maybe she's approaching her about directing this series for Hulu. Because, again, it's just, there's a website I found that has all the rumors as of March.
Well, because she has ACOTAR and then the Throne of Glass series and mm-hmm. What's the one that just came out? That's part of another series, isn't it?
Crescent City. And yeah. They do finally show you how they all sort of connect. Oh. They do and they don't. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
There's a slight connection, yes, between all of them.
She's just out here building her own universe.
Right? I'm here for it. You know, I love it. I hate that. I was talking to another online friend, an online friend of mine, about this series, because her and I are significantly older than I would say most of the people you see talking about these book series. And she's like, why is it we see all the problems? Because she's one of those, she will gladly tell you how old she is. So I am officially next week 39, and my friend Deb is 46. 47. Anyway, she's like, why is it that we visually see all the problems and we feel like in ACOTAR, Freya is whining, but we just keep devouring these books like we are 20 years old? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know why.
Well, the same can be said for the series that you and I both like. In Iron Flame, Violet was literally whining the entire book. And we were just like, what's next? What's next? What's next?
Yeah. Deb read that one recently, too. I can't. She didn't love it as much. She almost DNF'd. And she's like, don't get mad at me. And I was like, I'm not mad at you. Listen, when
just
you're
just disappointed.
I'm right. I should tell her. Be like, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Listen, I'm not going to lie. Some of you are going to be like, that is TMI, Miranda, and I don't need it. But I'm just going to be honest with you. When you're a woman going through, perimenopause or menopause, reading some of these books just don't hit the same. You're already angry at everything. No, I mean, you're right. Violet was a little whiny for my taste, but she has redeeming qualities. Or rather, other characters are very redeeming. So So, yeah, I don't know what that means exactly for the SJM universe, but they've been seen to have meetings. That's part of the updates. Some people are saying, like, maybe they've just become friends. And then some people was like, oh, maybe Margot Robbie would be Farrah. And I'm like, she's too old to be Farrah. No offense. That needs to be honestly, in my opinion. I think some of these adaptations that we love, for example, like they announced not long after book two for.
Yeah, I was about to say Margot's older than I am.
Right. I think she's same age as me. Older.
She's 33.
Okay, I'm older. But I truly, in my opinion, this is just me. Don't come for me, world. I almost feel like these new adaptations of things that we love, for example, Sarah J. Maas's universe or even Rebecca Yarros's universe that we just mentioned, they need to find people that fit the look, can act well, and that we don't know.
Yes, I agree.
Kind of like they did with Harry Potter. Yes, there are a lot of people in Harry Potter that were very well known, but most of those were the adults.
Yeah, they weren't the kids, the main characters.
Right. And I think there's something to be said about taking a universe where it's already created in book form and doing it. Lord of the Rings is the exception, so don't come at me with that one. Because, listen, I will die on the hill that one's perfect. But, like, that's a little different. Pretty much everybody in Lord of the Rings we did know. But I just feel... Or maybe not super well known, because do you think it's kind of like with Twilight? We didn't know any of them.
Nah.
And I think that's what makes a series like that special.
Yeah. No, so I would much rather have no names.
Well, I just feel like this is what happens a lot of times when you get big names already on a work like that. They get tired, especially. Okay, so these books that they're optioning, they're not even done being written. So what happens when you get somebody that's super popular right now and already in their, you know, late 20s to play a part, and then, like, in 5 years, they're like, well, I want to go another direction with my life, and we're not even done.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's why I think, yeah. Mm, yeah.
Yeah, I'm total agreeance with you. And I'm going to segue into our next segment.
Sure.
I know the word. So March is Miranda's birthday month, so she got to pick the book that we are going to discuss today. The Unfortunate Side Effects of Heartbreak and Magic by Brianne Randall. You want to give a brief little, like, here's why I loved this book, and like synopsis type thing?
Sure. I think I kind of went into it before, and then after Bianca heard me gush about it so much, she was like, well, hey, for your birth month, do you want to just talk about this book in more detail? And I was like, absolutely. for those of you that come back every month and listen to us, this is the book that I mentioned where I was like, I think we talked about this last month. Where I was like, or the month before, when I ask you and the audience, how do you react when someone who you, like, really value their opinion tells you they hated a book that brought you, like, to the, in your core, like, you felt this book was for you? Like, how do you handle that? Right? And this is also the book I ended up, I thought about it for months. So I have technically read this book 3 times now, and it's only been out since September of last year, of 2023. I read it once, and it just gutted me in, like, the good way. If you're a book people, you all know what I'm trying to say. It gutted me in a good way. And so I read it again. And then I read it again for this time. but... About a month ago, I decided I was going to write the author. I debated it. And I've heard this. I think it was Neil Gaiman who said this, actually, who said something about along the lines, paraphrasing, if you have a favorite author and they are still alive, tell them. Tell them why their work meant so much to you. Tell them why you love them. And they're like, not to like, he's basically saying like, not to boost their ego, but like, this is their job and they pour their hearts out on these pages, right? So if you love them, tell them. So I did.
Yeah. Give them positive feedback.
I did. I messaged Brienne on Instagram and she is a delight. I love her. And I told her just what this book meant to me. And she sent me a bunch of crying emojis. But I think I told you when I finished this book, I had moments where I felt like this book was written for me. And it's okay if you didn't like it. So don't think, oh God, I didn't like it. I gotta tell her. Because listen, you may read a book where you're like, this is my book. This was for me. And you may have that same like guttural reaction. And I may be like, oh, that's great, Bianca.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I did. I had just a visceral, like good in a good way. Cause people usually think visceral bad, but no, I just had this like connection to this book. And a couple of the characters in this book where I had moments where I felt like it was about me. I've had moments where I felt like it was for me. And then it was to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The whole, yeah. And then to recap, I have a creator that I love on Instagram. I adore her and I have personal conversations. She's not far from where I grew up. I said, hey, when I come visit, you know, I'd love to have book discussion. Super sweet. I adore her. I've talked about her on here a few times. She hated this book and decimated it and it crushed me. She said she felt this book, if you had religious trauma, made it worse and brought it back up.
That's
part of the thing I want to discuss with you because I do have major amounts of it. And I didn't feel that way. And she also had a thing where she said she really felt strongly that there should have been some sort of trigger warning that alluded to suicide. And I didn't take it that way. Like, well, yes, I did. But like, I didn't see it that way. Does that make sense? So I guess this is
I'm confused now.
So you clearly didn't feel that way either then.
No, I did not.
Okay. So she felt like there were some things that we're going to talk about. It was very obvious that a character was saying like, well, I'll just commit suicide. And she thought that was a very strong plot point, and that bothered her that there was no warning because she felt like that really could hurt some people. And I do understand. I'll give you that. She was also angry because this book has been described as fans of Practical Magic and Gilmore Girls together. And she said she didn't see that.
I can see the Practical Magic. I don't get Gilmore Girls vibes from it, though.
I do and I don't. I got more, I wish I'd written this down. I had it before. It gives me, like, Practical Magic meets Charmed meets a sliver of Gilmore Girls meets a Hallmark Will They Won't They meets, I don't know. It's a combination of things for me.
Well, we've established that you absolutely loved this book.
Yeah.
And I love that for you.
You did not like it.
Before we get started, I want to be completely honest. I did not like this book. When I say I was very close to DNFing this book.
My God.
I know.
Okay, so in all fairness, though, I want you to explain to me as we're kind of talking about it, and I feel like we're definitely going to be spoiling it, maybe not entirely, but to some extent. So, in full transparency, I gave it 5 stars. If you guys remember, I was like, this is one of my favorite books of 2023. So what did you give it? Because I don't think,
I don't think you rated it yet on Goodreads because...
Oh, I thought I did because I was waiting on you to message me and be like, Bianca!
It doesn't always show me. Like, sometimes it shows me everything and then sometimes I miss out. So,
But I give it 2.5 stars.
All right, so really quick, guys, this book, Sadie Rivelaire has always believed that the curse of 4 heartbreaks that accompanies her magic would be worth the price. But when her grandmother is diagnosed with cancer with only weeks to live and her first heartbreak, Jake McNeely, turns to town after a decade, her carefully structured life begins to unravel. With the news of their grandmother's impending death, Sadie's estranged twin brother, Seth, returns to town, bringing with him deeply buried family secrets that threaten to tear Sadie's world apart. Their grandmother has been the backbone of the family for generations, and with her death, Sadie isn't sure she'll have the strength to keep the family and her magic together. As feelings for Jake begin to rekindle, and her grandmother growing sicker by the day, Sadie faces the last heartbreaks, and she has to decide, is love more important than magic? So, let's get into it. What... overall, was it that had you really going, I don't like this?
It does have that very Hallmarky feel.
It does.
So as I was reading, I was like, oh, this is kind of cute. Like, it's a small town setting. Everyone knows each other. Like, I vibe with that. Everyone knows that I'm a Hallmark girly.
I love that vibe.
It throws me off, though. There was so much cursing in this book.
Okay.
So much.
I didn't think about that when I asked you to read this for me, because in full transparency, Miranda drops probably about 25 S-bombs a day, at least.
But just to have that juxtaposition of it giving you like the warm fuzzies and then dropping F-bombs and S-words and GDs, and I'm just like...
I don't like GDs. I will give you that. Like, I'm not a fan of those.
It was trying, like, I wanted it to pick a lane. Either be hard with your characters or give me the warm fuzzies. I can't have it both ways. Something that I did like was that there are recipes throughout the book, which we will discuss.
Oh, I loved it.
I would love to try some of these recipes.
Mm-hmm.
But after each chapter, there's a recipe that basically goes over what they talked about in that chapter because the main character owns a bakery.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved that part. I was like, I get recipes in this book? Yes!
I also loved about the bakery that a lot of the times the recipes that they give you, like one of her things. I will say one of the things I did not like is throughout the book, she's kind of referred to, like, clearly she has magic, but there's this weird, like, where they never really say which, and that bothered me for some reason.
Was because at one point, I forget what chapter it's in, but they're talking about their magic and someone says, oh, you mean like a witch? And they were like, no, we don't use that word. We don't like the connotations. What we have comes naturally to us and it's a God-given gift.
And listen, this goes into the argument and this could be a deep argument, right? But I understand, like, in this book, they do go to church. They have events that happen at the church. And that's, I think, why the one creator, and I don't want to call her out because I don't want to, listen, I love her, but I don't want anybody, like, attacking her is why I won't say her name. I almost said it. So I was like, ooh. Maybe that's where she was like, there was a lot of religious trauma. And maybe that's what it was, is they wouldn't actually say, I am a witch. And I know a lot of people that identify as a Christian witch, and some people are like, that is not possible. That's not a thing. You know what? If that's how you feel, that's how you feel. That's fine. But, like, I know people that identify as that. So I was really frustrated when they wouldn't say witch, because just because you are a witch doesn't mean that it's not a talent that was given to you by whatever higher power you believe in, right? Like, that bothered me. Even though I gave it 5 stars, that doesn't mean it doesn't come without faults to me. And that was one of the things that bothered me. But so she's a quote unquote witch. So I said all that with a caveat, meaning I'm going to talk about them like they're witches. Because to me, they are family of witches. And what I loved about the bakery in her witchiness is that when you got this recipe that they would talk about, usually a townsperson would come in that we have met, and they would say, like, oh, how is so-and-so? And they'd be like, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. And she'd be like, you need this rosemary whatever splash scone. And she would then tell you, the reader, that it's because it gives them courage and it gives them strength or whatever it is. So it's very clear she can read people and know what they need to heal them in a manner, which is something that has been going on for centuries and centuries. So I don't understand, unless it's that whole like persecution. If we call ourselves a witch, then people will come after us like we're witches. I don't know. That is the one thing I will say negatively about it, is that I was irritated with the fact that they were like, no, we're not a witch. I was like, because she even calls it, like, the author herself calls it a witchy book. So, I love you, Brienne, but I don't understand that. So, I'm with you. I did really love the bakery. I think that was one of the parts I totally loved. And I will say, the grandmother in this book struck me as like Southern grandma. You grew up Southern like I did. And I saw both of my grandmothers combined in this one grandma. And I think that's why I think that's another reason why I really like just loved this book. And then the whole concept of like being from an extremely small town, going back, thinking you would never go back kind of thing. I really liked that part. So yeah. So we can continue, but that was an irritation that had to do with the baking of the goods. It's like they would refuse to say, I'm a witch. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, chapter one opens up with Sadie, our main character. She's described as having these daily rituals that she does. And this is something that I wish would have, like you said, would have been straight out said. I don't think her rituals have so much to do with her magic as so much as it's OCD. That's how it came off to me as a reader.
Oh.
Because it was very, very meticulous and methodical. And it reminds me a lot of some people that I know with actual OCD. But it was never straight out addressed like that. Like, everything was attributed to her magic. So,
well, I will say, in defense of people that practice different sorts of magic, there is a lot of ritual to their daily lives. They do get up and they do a card pool. They may drink a very specific tea. They may eat a very specific breakfast. They may, like, as soon as they wake up, you know, take in a certain amount of sunlight. Or I know a lot of people that practice that they do have a very like ritualized morning or evening process.
Yeah, but that's literally her whole life. Like, yeah, she's constantly thinking throughout the day, oh, I have to do this at this time. Oh, I have to put whatever this is with this in order to get this done. Like, it's just, that was her whole commentary, was what she has to do in her rituals. And to me, that just screamed OCD.
And it's very possible. I don't know why I didn't catch that. I actually do have some family members that clinically actually are OCD. And you would think, being neurodivergent myself, I would have caught that. I didn't catch that. To me, that was just an internal monologue, because we've had this discussion before where you and I actually have much different idea of what goes on in the brain when it's just dormant. that's the kind of thing I do to myself, where I'm just sitting there and I'm like either driving home or doing something. And I'm like, okay, well, I have to get this done at this time in order to make this work so that I can do this. And then I'll have to go do this. And oh, wait, I forgot this. Like, that's just how my brain operates. So I guess I didn't see it that way. But now that you're saying it, I can kind of understand where someone would.
Yeah. Like, I found myself skipping quite a few pages just because I got tired of reading about all of the ritualistic stuff that she had going on. I was like, I honestly don't care about this.
I think that is part of, like, because I know how you read, and you have told me multiple times, like, if you don't feel like it has anything to really do with the book, or if it's like excessive description, you're like, next.
Yeah.
But that was the same way.
That was throughout the whole book. That's why I wanted
it
to
bring it up.
So she lives with her grandmother, who she calls Gigi, and they are both users of, quote, practical magic. Like we said, Sadie runs a bakery in the town, and the first chapter opens with them describing how the river is flooded. And in that town lore, because it's not just her and her grandmother, like the whole town believes this, that when a river is flooded, it means someone is coming back.
Which led me to believe, and if you really get into it, when they talk about a lot of the other townspeople, I think in certain ways, each townsperson has some sort of, I wouldn't say magic, but they have some sort of, like, intuition.
Yeah.
That's just, I feel, like, at least.
And Sadie is secretly scared, well, not secretly scared, but she harbors this fear in herself that she's going to be alone for the rest of her life. And it's very, like, pronounced in chapter one. Mm-hmm. And throughout the rest of the book, we learn why she is scared like that. We learn that she was... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I will say the... I don't know if anybody else that read this book or even you read it. I feel like you usually figure things out as quickly as I do. But, like, when immediately in chapter one, then when they started saying... the four heartbreaks, and she tells you what her first one was, and you get to the second one, I immediately realized what the fourth one was going to be.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious what the fourth one's going to be with the way they explain the relationship. And I will say, as someone who spent a lot of time with her grandmother growing up, who she had a lot to do with in raising me, like I talked to her, we send each other TikToks, like she my girl. I think that's another reason this book just grabbed me the way it did. I won't lie. I really do think there's a lot in here that I can associate with, and maybe that's why I have such a reaction to it. Because, listen, you're actually not alone. This book has a 3.22 on Goodreads. 20,639 ratings. 3,762 actual reviews with a combined of 3.22. So you are actually the one that's not along. I am the weird one here. I'm the outlier.
But we get in chapter one, we learned that she was proposed to once, but she turned him down. She didn't truly love him the way she felt that he needed to be loved.
Fair.
And then while she's working in the bakery, we learn that the person coming back is not her brother like she had thought it was going to be. It was actually Jacob McNeely, her very first love. Mm-hmm. And she, like, sees him, like, out on the street, and she realizes that after all these years with him being back in town, she's still in love with him.
Which and the first very hallmarked to me.
Yes, that was very hallmarky. And then the first recipe we get is a recipe for carrot cake cookies with cream cheese frosting.
And honestly, not even gonna lie, when I heard about these cookies, I was like, I bet you Bianca could make those. Won't even lie. I was like,
I mean, I do love to bake. I love to cook. I like being in the kitchen.
We do cookies very well.
I will toot my own horn.
No, I do. I think your cookies always are very good. So I was like, I bet Bianca would do a good job with those.
So we get into chapter two. Jacob was her first heartbreak, the one who started her curse, as how she puts it. We'll get into her curse a little bit later. You're fed bits and morsels of her past, and then you kind of put the puzzle all together at one time. When he left, her magic started doing weird things, like things would spontaneously combust in the kitchen, plants in the garden would die suddenly. Just things that were very off the wall, and it was basically describing, like, how when her first love left and broke her heart, that her body was, like, rebelling and her magic was rebelling because she didn't know how to cope with it.
I felt like that was kind of an example of, like, emotions at a really young age. You don't know how to cope with them. And it comes with time, right? Like, I thought it was is allegory the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, because he's been gone 10 years. He left, like, right after high school.
So, yeah, she's supposed to be, like, 28, almost 30, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's one of those things that, like, it comes with age, and you know, when you have your first heartbreak, you don't know how to handle it, and you do remember it for the rest of your life. So I felt like her powers acting up was, I mean, they do say in most of these books and movies we watch that during like puberty and teenagers is when like their stuff goes awry.
Yeah.
So I kind of attributed it to kind of like the idea of you're not mature enough to know how to handle it yet.
Yeah. We also meet Raquel, her best friend since childhood.
I love Raquel.
Yes, Raquel was great. I did like her.
She's really funny.
She's one of those friends that will just randomly show up at your house, lets herself in, sits on the couch, eats your snacks. Like, she's family.
It's me!
But Raquel has gotten word that Jacob is back in town, so she comes to the cafe and forces Sadie to go out to breakfast to calm her nerves.
Mm-hmm.
We also learned that Raquel has diagnosed bipolar disorder, but she's on medication, and she's mm-hmm. doing a lot better now. They leave breakfast, and Sadie goes back home for the day, and she's just kind of like walking and daydreaming and stuff. But she's interrupted by Jake. He drops by the house and he's bringing a peace offering. It's a tiny spoon. This is significant because Sadie's grandfather used to get them for her Gigi. Whenever he would travel, he would, you know, those little like, they're little itty bitty spoons. I know everyone has seen them, so you know what I'm talking about. But they're like collectible little items.
I feel like if you grew up at any point in the 80s or 90s, or I'd say even the 70s, you had a family member that collected these spoons.
Yeah.
Because in America, we have them for each state, or like special, like they have them for like Washington, D.C., or like specific monuments, or in like Europe, you can get them for like a specific country or a specific city. And I know people that had these wooden holders. Where you could like display them. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I haven't seen those.
Okay, so it's like this wooden holder that hangs on the wall, and you can have like 20 on there, and it displays them because, you know, on the handle is like the little like logo thing that tells you like where it came from. And they're usually these little silver teaspoons. They're not like big full-size spoons. They're usually like small. Like, what is it, an actual teaspoon for tea? Not like, So I thought it was really cute because I feel like we all grew up with someone who had some sort of family member that collects something, thimbles or teaspoons or something in that era.
But he's bringing one for Sadie because he wants to apologize for the way he left. And he's hoping that by offering this token, he's offering friendship. And she's basically says, I'm not sure how I want to proceed with this. Give me some time. And he's like, okay. And then after that chapter, we get a recipe for rum-soaked peach muffins with streusel topping.
I need these.
That sounds really good.
Oh, I need them so much. This is why I ate a snack. This is why you were like, I'll be ready in a minute. I was like, I'm going to need a snack because I knew. Which, by the way, I have to find a way to mail you some of these. Just like side note commercial that we are not sponsored. But everyone needs to go out and find Broderick's Homemade in Ireland. So it's called Caramental. It is a Belgian chocolate with a layer of caramel on top of shortbread.
That sounds amazing.
It tasted homemade. It tasted like you were like, here, Miranda, I made this for you. So yeah.
You'll definitely have to give me some of those.
Yeah, I got to find a way to mail you some of these because, oh, my God. Oh, they have a website, BrodricksHandmade.com.
Oh,
not
okay.
Sponsored, but hey, Brodricks, if you want to be on the we'll eat them. They're fantastic. Anyway.
So going to chapter 3, we actually get a flashback to when Sadie was 13. Sadie and her brother Seth are twins. He was born 4 minutes before her. And they are doing a like ceremony with Gigi. Gigi is explaining to them that they can forego their curse by giving up their magic. Seth goes first. Sadie doesn't really know what was said because she was outside, like it's supposed to be a private ceremony type thing. But he comes out of the house like upset, like he's visibly upset. So then it's Sadie's turn. She goes in. Gigi reads the tea leaves in Sadie's cup, says that she will have 4 heartbreaks, each worse than the last. The last will be so bad that it might consume her, taking away her magic anyway.
I find tea leaf reading and like extremely interesting. I don't know how to do it. It's not something I've learned to do, but I find it interesting.
The only tea leaf reading experience I have is with Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
The Grim. In the same chapter, we also learned that Gigi has stage 4 cancer. Sadie like freaks out. Like, we're going to find a cure. And Gigi is like, no, I have accepted my fate. I just want to enjoy the time I have left. And really then at like the end of...
is a cross between B. Arthur and Betty White.
Yeah, I can see that. The recipe at the end of this chapter is vanilla jasmine tea with black pepper and cinnamon.
Oh, yes.
See, I'm not a huge... I'm not a tea drinker, so I'll let you have that one.
I have tea right now, actually.
In chapter 4, Jake shows up at the bakery the next day, and he and Sadie, like, have some banter back and forth. And Gigi's actually at the bakery, and she invites him for dinner tomorrow, Sunday night. He also
Gigi says exactly what she thinks, by the way.
Yeah, there's no filter on that woman.
There is no filter on this lady. And I think that's why I love her so much. She basically, and she has decided that Jake is the one for her granddaughter. Like, no questions asked. Like, why are she basically, I think she even asked her at one point in the book. I don't know if it's happened yet or if it comes later. But she asked her at one point, like, why are you fighting this, essentially? Like, what's the big deal?
It's a little bit later.
Yeah, but... Gigi literally has no filter. I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, some of that language that you didn't care for comes from Gigi.
Yes, it does.
A lot of it comes from Gigi and Raquel.
Yes, Raquel. Raquel was also a very open person.
Yeah, both of them just say what they want.
So Jake also says that he is actually looking for a house in town, and there's actually one about a mile from hers. And that's a very short chapter. That's basically all that happens. The recipe is for mint julep ice cream.
Oh, I've had mint julep ice cream. If you have not, you are doing yourself a disservice. Go get you an ice cream maker. Do it.
The next chapter, they are heading to church the next morning, and they're having basically like a potluck after church. And Sadie is put to work slicing pies. And who just happens to be her pie slicing partner but Jake?
Of course.
He's literally everywhere.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a small town. Yeah, it's a small town. Usually in small towns, there's like one of each church. So if you're Baptist, there's one. There's usually one. Well, it depends on how small your town is. But like in some small towns, there's like one or two Baptist churches. There's like one Catholic church. There's like one or two Methodist churches. And you go to one of those. So like it would make sense.
And of course, Jake would know what church she's attending. They've known each other their entire lives. So.
Right. And I think he has a family member that goes there as well.
I think it's his uncle.
Yeah. So it makes sense that he would also be there. And then, if I'm not mistaken, Gigi invited him.
Yeah.
Gigi always be inviting people.
That is true. Jake shows up early for dinner that night and offers to help cook. I didn't mention this before. So in like chapter, I think it's in like chapter 2, this random puppy dog shows up in the garden. Aww. and Sadie like basically just adopts it. She's like, you're mine now.
Okay, Miranda, you can't do that. Someone might be looking for it. No, listen, I don't keep people's dogs. I try to find their home. But
this is just a plot line that I've left out of the summary, so I apologize. Throughout the rest of the chapters, we find out that the puppy actually belongs to Jake and that Jake's been looking for it. So with Jake showing up for dinner, Sadie has to hide the puppy in her room.
I hated her for this. Listen, this is the only thing that I was like, ma'am, Brienne, what, ma'am.
But she wants to keep the puppy. She doesn't want to give him up because she took it as like a sign when the puppy showed up that he was meant to be hers.
And he's so really sweet, and he obeys her. Like, I don't want to say obeys, that's horrible, but like she'll tell him like, come on, or sit, or like, let's be quiet. And he is like, he loves her. He's like, okay, you're my person, I love you. And so you're right. She sees it as a sign that like, this is almost, it's like she's decided this is her familiar, so to speak. Like this is her. And then like, she's in a slump because of like the heartbreak and her grandma losing. She knows her grandmother is going to die. So I think she sees this dog as like, it's going to fix everything.
Yeah.
But
so she hides the puppy away when Jake shows up. And then Raquel shows up, like I said, just because she can. And she goes to get something out of Sadie's room, and the puppy comes out, and Jake is like, oh, you stole my dog. And it's like this whole thing, a whole like chaos ensues. But after dinner, Jake and Sadie go for a swim in the pond, and they're like starting to get like comfy cozy, if you know what I mean, with each other.
Yeah.
But just as things are like ramping up, she's interrupted by her phone ringing. Gigi fell and they have to go to the hospital. And then the recipe for this is orange balsamic marinade. Mm. So the next chapter, they get to the hospital. They find out that Gigi is fine. The doc says there's just a few bruises. But lo and behold, Seth is there, the missing brother. Sadie hasn't seen him in, I think it's been a couple years now.
It's been several years.
Yeah. And they kind of get into like one of those verbal fights that siblings get into.
Well, I was a little frustrated because they keep saying, she's like, and they keep alluding to like they had a disagreement of some sort, but like no one's,
it's never explained.
It, yeah. Right. I mean, it kind of is at some point, but I'm like, well, no, it is, but it's just, I didn't like their disagreement, I will say that.
Yeah, I can agree with that. But after that verbal fight at the hospital, Jake drives Sadie home. Raquel had stayed there, and they stay, and they talk just about life in general. Sadie kind of just unloads on her. A little while later, Seth comes home with Gigi, and I think this fall kind of made Gigi realize that her time is ticking. So she tells the story of their mother, Florence. Florence was an amplifier, meaning that she can amplify other people's gifts or magic, however you want to say it in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And amplifiers are not supposed to be fertile. Like, she basically knew that she couldn't have kids. But she fell in love with a man named Julian, and he had dark magic. Julian,
we
basically,
all mess with that juju.
Yeah, Julian basically performed a dark ritual in order to make her fertile. Gigi tried to stop it, so she ended up.
The reviews I read, they had a big complaint about this because they felt like it took away their mom's like autonomy, and I completely understand that argument.
Yeah, like, I can see it.
I completely, like, if somebody came at me and said I hated this book because I felt like she didn't have a choice for herself, I will give you that.
But yeah, because on one hand she's being drugged into this dark magic, but on the right. other hand, her mother is interfering, saying, "No, you can't do that."
Mm-hmm. That's a very weird situation to be in.
Yeah. And in trying to stop Julian, Gigi actually kills Julian. And then we also find out that Julian had been beating Florence as well.
Which, yeah. Okay, bye, Julian.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry if you disagree with me, but bye. Like, I don't play that.
In the midst of all this, which I got kind of confused, I had to read this a couple of times and I still didn't fully understand it. Somehow Gigi tied the bad magic to herself So when she dies, that bad magic will manifest in one of the twins.
So I don't think initially she thought that's what would happen. I think she had to make a split second decision so that when she killed Julian, his bad magic wouldn't leach out into the world. And
okay.
The way that unfortunately happened is like she has it, but she, it's like,
I guess I don't understand how it would kill the twins. That's where I get.
It's everything comes with a price. You were a fan of Once Upon a Time, so that's a way to describe it. You know how he's always saying, everything comes with a price, dearie?
Yeah.
That's what I thought when they explained a lot of things in this book. I could hear him saying that. And I think that was the unfortunate consequence, because I think they even say, one, as an amplifier, she should not have had children.
Okay.
So it's already going against the natures of the world. Two, he used black magic, essentially dark magic, however you want to refer to it, to make this thing happen. And he was not a good human, obviously, on top of that. So I think when Gigi did what she did and eliminated him, everything came at a price. And unfortunately, the price is going to be one of the children. Maybe not now, but later.
You explain it a lot better than the book did, so thank you. And that's the end of the chapter. The recipe is salted cream, cold foam, cold brew with Earl Grey. The next chapter, Gigi basically orders Sadie to stay home for the day. She needs a day off just to take her mind off of things. And Gigi says, I'm going to tend to the bakery. You stay home. Well, Jake randomly shows up at the house and they have like an almost kiss moment.
Yeah.
And Sadie doesn't let it happen. Basically, they kind of pull apart and go their separate ways. Seth shows up for dinner that night at the behest of Gigi, and he and Sadie kind of just hash everything out. They want to get everything out in the open so that they can be together for Gigi at this time. The next morning, Sadie goes for a run, and she goes to the bakery after her run. She comes back home to her Aunt Tava, who she hasn't seen in years. Tava says that they all come back home eventually. It's the Revelaire way. Revelaire is their last name.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we kind of know that the rest of the family is eventually going to show up, especially now that they all know Gigi is dying. And the recipe for this is just plain old fried chicken.
Good old fried chicken, which I will say I did kind of like how apparently no phone, they allude to the fact that like no phone calls were made. And like the one aunt, they make it sound like she kind of just blew in with the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just.
It's the Revelaire way.
Yeah. It's like they just know. Yeah. So again, how are we not witches? I don't.
So Aunt Kay shows up and then Aunt Anne is next. Gigi formally tells everyone about her cancer. She says, quote, sooner rather than later. The recipe for that chapter is cherry cheese pie. The next chapter, chapter 9, Sadie asks Raquel to go with her to Wild Rose Hill to obtain the family flower for a spell to help heal Gigi. The flower is a Mount Diablo buckwheat. We also learned that Wild Rose Hill is haunted, and Raquel is basically like, I ain't going up there. And Seth is like, well, I'll go if you go. So they all kind of get in the car, and they go up to Wild Rose Hill. And it's a hill that you have to climb. I basically envision it like a tiny little mountain.
I kind of envisioned it like, I don't want to use a horror movie as an example, but you ever watched, like, a horror or suspense movie and this gate opens and you start driving up kind of a steep hill and yeah. There's a, like a giant house like at the top looming at you. That's kind of what I thought about, how it's like it would be very steep to walk up, but it's actually like just a big hill.
Okay, I can see that. But as they're nearing the top, Sadie is like starting to gather the buckwheat and mm-hmm. She hears a very clear deep voice say, get out. I mean, that would scare me, too. So they all go running. They get back in the car. They get back home. And they're all just like, we're never going to talk about this ever again. Sadie and Seth perform the spell. And they basically get Gigi to wear this like protective necklace type mm-hmm. thing. Gigi admits that it does ease her pain.
Sadie, they basically just made a protection amulet is what they've done. But they think it's going to do so much more and answer their prayers and Gigi's not going to die. But unfortunately, even the world of magic, that's not how things work. Like, everything has a cycle. So, you know?
After that, Sadie goes to see Jake and they have another almost kiss. But then Jake says he has to, like, tell her something. He says that he's engaged to a girl that he met in the city. Her name is Bethany. And she's actually pregnant. And the recipe in this one is for a healing salve.
Which sounds very soothing.
So, boys and girls, we have a pregnancy trope.
I know a lot of people hate these, and typically I hate them, but this manner didn't bother me as much. It irritated me, but it didn't, like, because, listen, normally I hate the pregnancy trope of, like, oh, well, we gotta get married now. Like, I don't like that, but this one was different. I'm assuming you also hated it, though.
I did. Well, I also hated, like, that just turned me off to Jake completely, because how are you going to be almost kissing other women when you're engaged with a baby on the way? Mm-mm.
And even the
that
way
gave me the ick.
Yeah, even the way it ends up being explained, which you're about to go into here shortly, even the way that it's explained, it's still irritating, because, like, it's a little redeeming but irritating. It's still ick.
Sadie goes home and tells Seth about Jake, and Gigi has another fall in the house. Gigi talks to Seth and Sadie to tell them what they need to do when she's gone. It's kind of incoherent at this point. They don't really understand what she's talking about, but they're just like, okay, like, we'll be sure and do all that. The next day, Anne and Sadie go to the farmer's market, and they actually run into Jake and Bethany. And Sadie decides to make nice, and she makes small talk with Bethany.
And of course, as always, Bethany's beautiful, Bethany's sweet, like, that's how it always goes.
Yeah. And then it clearly says that a week goes by. Sadie doesn't really leave the house because she wants to tend to Gigi. Gigi puts her foot down and forces the whole family to go to church on Sunday. I think it's just because Gigi wanted some alone time. She was tired of all those people in her house.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like that everybody was being forced to go to church because it was don't play that. But I think you're right. I don't think it was like, it's like you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. It's kind of it's what I thought Gigi was getting at. She's like, please, everyone, just get out of my house for a minute. Like, I just need a minute.
The next week, Gigi visibly worsens, her condition worsens. But she has what's known as the surge. For those who may not know, the surge is what happens when an evidently dying person has, like, one or two, like, almost normal days. Like, it seems like they're gonna, like, just pull through and just be A-okay.
It's really hard to watch.
It is.
Because, like, you know that person is dying.
Yes.
Like, you've already accepted it, or maybe you haven't. In my case, with my dad, I had already accepted it. And he was in hospice, and we didn't know when it was going to be, but I felt pretty sure it was going to be soon. And you show up, and they're just like, oh, hand me the remote. Oh, hey, I'd like to have a donut. Like, what are you doing today? What are you doing here? And you're like, what?
We had the same thing happen with Brad's stepmom 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, has it been 2 years? 3 years.
Yeah. Has it been three?
I think this will be 3 years.
Okay.
I had to think about it for a second. I was like, what year is it?
And then I was like,
But yeah, Tina did the same thing. Like, she was down for like 2 weeks. Like, we were like, this is it. And then she had like three great days and it threw everyone off. And the hospice nurse was just explaining to us, it's called the surge.
It's very...
It's off-putting.
It's so off-putting.
Because you don't know how to handle it.
No, and even on their surge days, like, they can go all day being really, really good. And then it's like a flip. It's almost like turning off a light. Or, like, everything changes and they're no longer in their surge. They're back to, like, not knowing who you are, not understanding what's going on, being in pain. And you're like, what just happened? It's very terrifying. And as weird as this sounds, maybe that is another reason that this book was for me. Because I did go through that with my dad. So I felt strongly for the character, for Sadie. Because, again, this is the point where I felt like this was me. So, like, everybody's going to be like, you defending this book hard. No, I'm not defending it. I am, and I'm not even justifying. I am explaining why I had such a, this had a, such a grip on me. That's all.
Yeah. But sadly, he passes the next day after that last surge.
Mm-hmm.
Sadie and Seth now have a deadline. They have 30 days to balance nature or else one of them will die. The recipe for this one is harvest soap for luck.
Which I did want to ask. I did want to be like, well, how do we know, though? Because sometimes magic is also unpredictable. So how do we know for sure that they would die? That's what I was thinking at this point.
Yeah, that's also valid. They're basically just going off what Gigi told them, so.
Right. And I mean, she's probably had a lot of years to, like, try to work on this and figure it out, so.
On the next chapter, everyone in town mourns with the family, and a black cat comes up to Sadie in the garden, and she names him Simon.
I had a black cat named Simon when I was a kid.
I had a black cat, but his name was Bagheera.
I like it. I also had another one. His name is Blackie. I had Blackie. And listen, don't come at me, folks. I was two. I looked at him and was like, "Him Blackie." Well, I know how problematic it is. It's okay. I understand now. But 2-year-old Miranda did not.
Jake comes by and he fixes up the garden with some help from people around town. Mm-hmm. And then he sits with Sadie in the garden. Gigi wanted to be cremated. It was already paid for. And then Gigi had also left a box for Sadie and she finally opens that box. In it are tax documents, various deeds, and a letter. The letter is basically saying that if Sadie sacrifices her magic, Seth will live. And the recipe for this one is maple butterscotch walnut fudge.
And I used to make that growing up, and I love it. It's so good. It's not the same recipe, but so good.
In the next chapter, the last family member finally shows up. It's Florence, their mother.
Which we knew. Come on.
Yes. But what we didn't know is that she showed up with their little sister, who is 7 years old, and her name is Sage.
I actually adored Sage.
She was cute.
She was cute, yeah.
Florence, Sadie, and Seth sit down, and Florence tells basically her side of the story. She had met Julian as a teenager, and she wanted nothing more than to be rid of her magic so that she could be with him. And Julian said that he knew of a spell to get rid of it, and she believed him. What it did was it actually made her fertile and she got pregnant. And now Florence wants to make things right. And this recipe is Dreamcatcher hot chocolate.
Delicious.
Next chapter, Sadie goes to the cafe to clear her mind and basically bake away the stress. Jake stops by to check on her, but she just kind of waves him off. Later, Sadie and Seth go in the woods out behind their house, and Sadie is trying to talk to Gigi. She feels a presence is there with them in the woods, but it most certainly is not Gigi, and Seth, like, hauls her out of there. We're like, we're never doing this again. Even more family shows up. It's the day of Gigi's memorial dinner. Raquel is there. And Immediately upon seeing Raquel and Seth, Florence makes a comment of like, oh, how long have y'all been dating? And Sadie just kind of like, what? And so Seth and Raquel fess up that they have been together for quite a while.
I saw this coming.
I did not. That one took me by surprise.
Because it was clear Raquel was dating someone, right? There was like little hints here and there that she was into someone. And I was like, well, why would they never say who?
Yeah, that's
like, because she was always like, oh, gotta go. Like, it was like she was always very like, she, like you said, she's the friend that comes in, eat your food, eat your snacks because you've known her since birth kind of thing. And then all of a sudden it was like, gotta go, bye. And I'm like, well, is she seeing someone? But it's such a small town. Like, who could she be seeing that it wouldn't, she wouldn't want to tell her? Like, she wouldn't be talking about it. And I was like,
But so they've been together for a while. They've actually been talking since before Seth came back into town. And Sadie was just all wrapped up in her own stuff that she didn't really pay attention to what was going on around her. Raquel's like, is this cool? Like, are we good? And Sadie's like, yeah, I just need time to adjust to my best friend and my brother together. But she's cool with it.
Which, yeah, you would need an adjustment for that. I mean, honestly, like, and I think anyone would.
And then we have what I call an untitled chapter, because I don't know if you have the physical book or just the audio book.
I have physical.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In the physical book, it looks like it starts a new chapter, like there's a page break and everything, but the chapter is not titled. So I'm just calling it the untitled chapter.
If I remember, because I've done audio and physical. I'm looking on my shelf right now, and I think it might be downstairs because I actually have a signed book plate and everything.
Oh, nice.
For my copy. I don't see it on the shelf behind me. But if I remember from the audio version, it's actually a different tone altogether for this chapter that you're about to describe.
I don't know about that, but Jake shows up to the house, and Sadie, they're all still at the dinner. I'm sorry. So they're all still at the dinner. Jake shows up last to this dinner, and Sadie makes a toast to rule number 5. A legacy without love isn't worth a damn sugar.
Because that was what the grandma used to say.
Yeah, Gigi had all these different kind of rules, and Sadie's favorite was number 5.
Which it very much reminded me of Gibbs from NCIS, where he would, like, smack him in the back of the head and be like, rule 32!
But that concludes, like, all of that, and the recipe is marjoram and white pepper macaroni and cheese, which that sounds delicious.
I know, right? I was like, wait a second.
Stop that, Miranda.
I can't listen. It's 11:47. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was trying to like hide it. It didn't happen.
We are nearing the end, so
yeah, but we're not done.
So, chapter 14. Sadie is literally counting down the days, trying to figure out how to save both herself and Seth. And this is where we get to the suicide part that Miranda was talking about. Mm-hmm. Sadie is basically getting really, really desperate, and she wants to save her brother more than anything.
Well, because I think, and this is just my viewpoint on this, we've already talked about it, where Gigi has said, if you give up your power. So I think there's a misinterpretation, which even happens in movies like Charmed and things, or shows like Charmed and things like that, where sometimes in spell work or, and I think even in people that do actually practice some sort of witchcraft, there can be different interpretations, right? So to me, I think what is actually happening, and maybe why I didn't realize that this could potentially be extremely triggering to someone, is because I think Sadie listens to what Gigi has said, and she's taking it in a literal interpretation. Like, I have to die. That's the only way I can give up my, like, that's the only way, like, is for me to, I have to die for him to live.
Yeah. And so with that interpretation, Sadie makes a tea from what she calls never wake up berries.
So I was assuming it was, keep going. I'll remember in a minute. There's a very specific berry that is actually, if you put it in a tea, it can actually, like, you will not wake up.
Well, she downs, like, she makes a whole pitcher, and she drinks, like, half the pitcher, and, like, her eyes are getting heavy, like, she just wants to lay down at the table. Seth walks in, and the way it's described in the book, it's like she's almost dreaming.
Nightshade,
okay,
Nightshade, also referred to as Belladonna. I assumed she meant she made some sort of, like, Belladonna nightshade tea. But anyway.
But Seth catches her and, like, force feeds her jewel reed, which is an antidote to poison. Mm-hmm. And then Seth has the state of mind to call Jake because Jake is a trained paramedic.
Of course he is.
So Seth and Jake come over and basically, like, resuscitate her and get all the poison out of her system. Mm-hmm. And the recipe for this one is Athena's tea.
I love tea.
Chapter 15, Sadie makes some welcome to the neighborhood scones and takes them over to Bethany. Bethany has officially moved into that house that's just down the road.
Listen, I love this, by the way.
These welcome to the neighborhood scones, they're just supposed to make a person, like, open up a little bit and just be more relaxed. But Sadie figures out that she put a little bit too much of her special herbs and spices in those scones, and Bethany just ends up spilling her absolute guts to the stranger.
Uh-huh.
Says that she isn't actually pregnant. She just said that because she didn't want to lose Jake, because Jake had been talking about moving back home for a while. She knew that he wasn't happy in the city. So she was like, the only way I can keep him is if I get pregnant. And she's been actively trying to get pregnant. It just hasn't worked. So the recipe for this chapter is orange honey vanilla scones.
Yeah, I was like, how well do those really work? I did. She literally, like, the thing is, there were people that were mad in both the reviews and the books that were like, when she fed her these and she realized what was happening, she sure didn't stop her. I was like, would you?
Yeah, Sadie just let her talk. She's just like, I'm not getting in the middle of this.
Yeah, she just let her go. And then I think it even says something, it alludes to or tells you specifically. Yes, I've read this book 3 times and I can't remember exactly. Come on now. But it basically says, like, she won't remember this. Like, she won't remember that she spilled her guts to Sadie.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the magic that be, essentially. I was like, oh, okay.
So Sadie goes back home and she doesn't quite know, like, how to process all of that information. The next chapter is basically just Florence trying to help Sadie and Seth figure things out, but it doesn't work. I won't go into, like, all of that, but just know that it doesn't work. She tried. The recipe for that chapter is chocolate pecan pie.
I think it's because everybody's looking into some of this literally. Like,
yeah.
Literally.
It's not till this chapter 17, that Sadie realizes that she can just give up her magic and not her life. And she tries to come to terms with giving up a part of herself that she's basically had her entire life.
Well, my thing... Okay, so I understand, like, sacrificing and giving up so that your sibling or loved one could live. I'm all for that. But that would be a hard turmoil to an extent as well, because, like, she makes her living, essentially allows her to, like, feed herself and live because she has this talent with the bakery. And it does make you stop and say, if I give all this up, would I be able to bake at all? Like, and that sounds selfish. I understand that sounds selfish. But there's a lot to contemplate here in giving up something, such a huge part of yourself, essentially.
Yeah. And Sadie just basically grapples with that entire chapter. It's all inner monologue type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The recipe is hyacinth bean soup.
I was intrigued. I won't lie.
I don't think I've ever eaten hyacinth, so.
I don't know that I have either. That's why I was like, have I? Yeah.
Chapter 18, there is a fall festival, and everyone goes. Jake finds Sadie and tells her that Bethany faked the pregnancy. They have like a good heart to heart. He's basically like, is there any way that this can work out between us? And they end up making out behind a tent at the fall festival. They go pretty hard at it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, y'all are in public.
Well, listen, I don't know if you've ever been to some of these fall festivals, but if you hide in a tent, you behind a tent. Like, you ain't visible. I mean, I'm just saying, in high school, I may have known some people that made out behind a fall festival tent.
Are you one of those people?
I plead the fifth.
Okay, she pleads the fifth, everyone. You heard it here. And moving on from that, the whole family has just kind of accepted that Sadie is going to give up her magic to save Seth. Oh, the recipe for this chapter is orange-infused honey.
What was it? I'm sorry, orange-infused...
Orange-infused honey.
Oh, I do love infusing honey. My favorite infusion of honey is lavender-infused honey, though.
Ooh, I bet that is good.
It is good. Earl Grey tea, but iced. Ice it down.
Uh-huh.
But when you... So, obviously, you have to put the honey in it when it's hot, right? So, Earl Grey tea with lavender honey and a little bit of lavender syrup, but over ice.
Nice. Sounds refreshing.
It's my favorite thing in the whole wide world. Hot lavender Earl Grey is really good as well, but the cold, it just hits the spot. As Caden says, it just hits different.
Hey, that's a Taylor Swift song.
Is it really?
Yeah. Okay, so this is the last chapter, chapter 19. So if you don't want spoilers, skip ahead like 10-15 minutes. So they perform the ritual and Sadie does lose her magic. She can feel like the physical emptiness in it, in her, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the chapters, her dealing with that emptiness, it's kind of like, I equate it to when someone loses a limb. It's like phantom limb.
That I think that's a great explanation.
Thanks. They actually perform the ritual out in the woods, so they all head back home after. Florence was not at the ritual, and she left a note at the house saying that she would be back, but she wants to find a way for Sadie to get her magic back. And that's basically how the book ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, the end. Her mother's off trying to find a cure.
But this is a one-done book.
Yeah, because it left it open for a second one, and I looked to see if there was a second one, and there's not.
She is in the process of writing two books right now. One is a witchy, but it has nothing to do with this book. My understanding is this book is complete. Like, this is done.
Okay. Which, and if I remember correctly, because I didn't write it down, there is not a recipe at the end like there was for all the other chapters.
There's not. Okay.
Check. Yeah, there's not.
I'd say I'd have to go get my copy, but I don't think so.
I will say I like the, so at the very end, Sadie kind of goes out to the garden. She's just looking over everything, and she's thinking about everything that Gigi had taught her over the years. And the very last sentence is, hold on to hope no matter the cost, because as long as there's hope, everything else is just the unfortunate side effects of heartbreak and magic.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought kind of did a good job of saying, like, the end.
Yeah.
I will say there are some good quotes and Southern sayings in this book. To me. I will defend this book, but I want to say, I feel like for me, I think a huge part of it was right book, right time. Like, if I had caught this book at maybe a different time, I don't know that I would have the same response to it that I have. And I don't know if I reread this book in 10 years, I will still have that response to it. But I'm not mad that you didn't enjoy it. I'm upset because I asked you to read this book and you didn't enjoy it, but not upset in the sense of like, oh, Bianca, I can't believe you didn't like it, but more like, I'm sorry you didn't like it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I will read books from this author. This was her debut novel, so it's possible I don't like her other works. I do like that the recipes were delicious. I do like that they tied to something that actually happened in the book. I like that they were, it sounded pretty easy to make, in, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they weren't overly complicated recipes. I read over them.
No, they were not at all. And in the audiobook, it actually breaks it down and says, and it's like in Gigi's voice.
Oh.
Like, yeah, she's like, because if you read the recipe, it actually sometimes she'll say, now, sugar, what you're going to need is, or.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the same narrator, but she just does the specific voice for Gigi. I don't know. I just.
You just love it. And I'm glad that you love it. I'm glad you found your book.
I did find my book. And I want to say there's a book before it we've talked about that you really liked. And I was like, it's okay.
There probably was.
I think there was. And I was like, it's okay. Because there's a series that you really, really love. And I've read book one so far. And I liked it. But I just liked it. And you love it.
Yeah.
It's your Red Queen. It's your Red Queen.
Yeah, I know.
I like it. I'll continue. But I didn't like love it.
Well, we'll go to our last segment unless you have any final words or thoughts.
I say I'm torn on saying if you have someone you really trust their opinion and they say don't read this because
I won't tell someone not to read it. I will just tell them my issues with it.
So there are times I will tell someone not to read something. I have told you, don't read this. It is not for you.
Yeah.
Because you and I are close enough that I know what is an absolute for you. Like,
yeah.
No. And I do feel bad because I did buy you this as a gift.
I still appreciate it because I know it's a book that you love. So when you sent it to me, I was like, oh, Miranda, like you really wanted me to read this. So I appreciate the sentiment.
I really did. So I guess if you're interested in reading this book, go into it with a clear mind and go into it knowing some of the things that we've discussed. If you listened all the way through, if you didn't, and you skipped, and now you're back, I will say there are some triggering things that I didn't realize were triggering to some people. And that's not to say that they're not right. It's just I didn't have that effect on me. But that if you tend to gravitate towards things I like if you follow us and you're like, oh, I like Miranda's taste, then I think you'll like this book. But if you followed me and you're like, she was wrong, I hated it, then maybe you wouldn't. So that's my final.
Like, I don't regret reading it now mm-hmm. that I finished it, but I won't read it again, if that makes sense.
Like, you won't be like me and read it Well, if I read it anymore, it'll be a fourth. I've read it three times. I felt like it was only fair to you that I read it and make sure I didn't forget something. Because I do feel like when you like something so much that maybe you can get blinders.
So yeah. I did read it a third time in preparation for this. And like I said, you know, maybe I read it again in like 5 years and I'm like, what? Because in all fairness, like I am rereading Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas. I'm rereading it because it's the series that my sister-in-law actually had not read of hers yet. And we decided we were going to do this together. Reread for me, first time for her. And there are a couple of books that I've gone through so far that old Miranda, when she first read them, like when they first were published, was like, five stars. And I'm like, whoa, slow down. 4 stars? Now, listen, number one, still 5 stars, hooked me in, still liked it. Nah, I'd probably go more 4.5 now that I'm rereading it. But my point is, like, things change. So it's okay.
So, our final segment, recent reads and acquisitions.
Have you acquired much lately over there, Bianca?
I've got a few.
Okay.
I will do my reads first. Life and Water. So I am currently reading The Beauty of Darkness by Mary E. Pearson. It is the final book in the Remnant Chronicles series. This thing is thick. I did not know this was... I've been getting them through the library. This mm-hmm. is 700 pages.
How am I not familiar with this one?
It's a YA fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed... The first book was actually my least favorite. Honestly, the first book was kind of boring. Not much happened. But it intrigued me enough to continue, and I loved the second book. So I will finish this third book probably by Wednesday. Today is Sunday. Yeah, I'll probably finish it by Wednesday.
Do you still enjoy, with book one being boring and book two being you loved it, is three panning out to be enjoyable for you?
Yes, because now everything is like coming to a head.
So does it make you appreciate one anymore or still
no? No.
Okay.
So the premise is that this girl, she's a princess of a kingdom, and her parents have basically betrothed her to someone that she had no say in.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, I don't want to. So she runs away with her like lady's maid, basically. This okay. is the first book. They run away and they like pretend to be normal everyday people. Like they start working in an inn and they're like maids and
that is
barkeep and stuff.
Really familiar to you can't spell treason without T, except for they're not ladies maid. They're actually a couple.
Oh, okay.
But they do the same. Like they have to escape the kingdom. Like one is a right hand kind of like assassin to the queen, and the other one is like the queen's the queen's witch. So they're like high up and they have to escape and they become like nobody barkeep kind of thing.
Yeah,
interesting.
But I really, outside of the like 3/4 of the first book, I just found boring. The last like 40-ish pages, I was like, heck yeah, stuff's happening now. So from that point through the third book, I really enjoyed it. So I will recommend the series. I also read City of Stardust by Georgia Summers. I talked about this earlier on the podcast when I bought this. But I read it this week. And it's basically about a family, the Everleys,
mm-hmm.
who, for lack of a better word, are indentured to this woman entity mm-hmm. kind of thing. And they kind of have to hide the youngest Everly, because if this woman finds out that her name's Violet, if Violet exists, she will basically kidnap her.
No.
So it's basically them hiding Violet and Violet growing up, not knowing anything about her family or the magic that's involved. I really enjoyed it. There was a lot of mystery and intrigue. And fantastical lore involved in it. The cover is gorgeous. If you look at the cover, absolutely loved it. That's what made me buy the book. I'm a sucker for a pretty cover.
And listen, I know we're not supposed to do that, but I think within the last, I'd say 15 years, covers have really changed to make you want to, like, we all grew up with that saying, like, don't judge a book by its cover. But again, I don't know if you agree or disagree, but I truly, and I will say 15 years, maybe a little more, that they've really kind of flipped that phrase and given you covers that have made you go, ooh.
Yeah, yeah. And City of Stardust definitely did that.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
So those are my reads that I wanted to mention. Two books that I got from the library.
Oh, that's right. You went to the sale, right?
I mean, these are just from the library. These are library. Oh. Terrace Story by Hilary Leichter. I think that's how you pronounce her name. A YouTuber that I follow, she was gushing about this book, so I got it to the library, and I will let you know what I think. And then I borrowed The Unmaking of June Farrow by Adrienne Young. This will be my first Adrienne Young book. She's really known for her two YA books. What are they called? I see the picture in my head, the cover.
Oh.
Adrienne Young. It's got the red hair woman.
Fire.
Oh, Namesake. Namesake and Fable.
Fable, yes.
But this is a, it says young adult, but I read the first chapter and I didn't think it was young adult. Maybe I'm mistaken. I thought
that's
it was
happening a lot now, though. I'm going to talk about that in a minute.
My two acquisitions are actually pre-orders that finally came in. A Fate Inked in Blood by Danielle L. Jensen.
Oh, I'll read that.
It is so gorgeous. It has sprayed edges that are, like, when I say blue, it's like metallic blue, like it's shiny. I have never seen edges that are shiny like this before. It's
Listen, I had somebody say something extremely negative about us girls that get excited about sprayed edges the other day, and I did not feed the stupid, but...
I will not hear any criticism about my sprayed edges, okay?
I want to be like, listen, let people collect what they want, and let people be happy with what they want, and if you don't understand sprayed edges, then you don't gotta buy them. Leave them there for the rest of us.
But this is supposed to be like a Viking fantasy tale, and I'm super excited about it. The cover actually looks kind of like Lady Gaga, and it throws me off every time I look at it. my final one is my queen, Victoria Aveyard. Her final book in the Realmbreaker series came out. It's called Fatebreaker.
Gorgeous cover as well.
Well, I got the Barnes & Noble exclusive edition, which is a purple cover.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also a thick book. How many pages is this? Wait. Oh, there's an epilogue. Not read that. Separate. This is 625 pages. So she's also pretty thick.
Yeah.
Which, A Fate Inked in Blood... It's not like a super thick book, but the print is super small, and it's over 400. So I've noticed a trend this year. I am reading very, very, very thick books.
I actually am too so far. I'm like, what am I doing?
Especially with Sabrina making me read the Clockwork.
I am going to, I gotta finish this. Well, I don't have to finish this Sarah J. Maas, because technically part of it's a reread for me, but I got a lot I gotta read right now.
Well, I've now read the first, the three Clockwork books by Cassandra Clare, and those were pretty thick too. Like, my pages read this year are gonna be way up there.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, because she remapped out how she wants me to read them, and I think we're now on the same thing.
Oh,
because
okay.
I have some general knowledge of the series, because I have read the first couple of Shadowhunters in the past. So she sent me, I think I'm now officially on the same path that you are with reading that she gave us.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
But that's all of my recent reads and acquisitions. Are there any you want to mention, Miranda?
I have not really acquired much, I'm going to be honest. I did buy a collector's edition of, where did it go? See, why is technology not working right for me today?
It's the fate of Sunday afternoon records.
I guess so. Anyway, I bought a collection or a collector's anniversary edition of Tim Burton's The Melancholy Death of Oyster Boy and Other Stories. It's gorgeous. Well, if you're into that kind of art, if you're into like Tim Burton, which I am, I love him a lot.
Well, see, I didn't know Tim Burton wrote books. I thought he just did movies.
No, he's written a couple of books. That one, I think, is like his only one. There's some like Frank and Weenie, the graphic novel. He wrote that. He has illustrated several works as well. He's written like forwards for a couple of books, but this is like, I think, his only book he wrote himself.
Is it a book or a graphic novel?
No, it's a book. It does have pictures, but it's a book.
Okay. I asked because on Goodreads, the genre says graphic novel. So I was like, wait.
Well, like every page has kind of like a picture that goes with it, but it's not graphic novel as in the sense of like what you and I think of like a comic or a graphic novel.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I have to send you, I'll repost it for everybody else, but I have to send you this TikTok of a lady coming into a store and not understanding what graphic novel meant. She thought graphic as in Bianca No-No. And so she yelled at the lady for trying to sell her a graphic novel for her young child. She was trying to sell her the Babysitter's Club graphic novels, and then the Smile graphic. And she was like, graphic, though. Why would you guys do that? She's like, well, that's what the publisher does. It's not like... Yeah, no, it's, I would kind of think of this book in the vein of, do you remember, and I feel like everybody had a copy of this book, it was like The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yeah.
Where some pages had like really unique kind of creepy drawings.
Yeah.
So imagine if almost every page or quite a few of them had a very Tim Burton-esque drawing to go with the story. But not a full page of like sections, like a graphic novel does. Yeah. So I purchased that, and I purchased another book that has been translated to English. It's called Japanese Ghost Stories. I apologize, I accidentally left it downstairs, so I don't remember the author. And I think because it's multiple stories, it's multiple authors. Okay. But I was really intrigued by it. The cover is kind of weird, but I thought it was really cool. So that, and then I bought one book on Kindle for a series I had never heard of, but I'm super interested in. It is in the vein of all of my, like, cozy mysteries with, obviously, a witchy vibe, and it's called Eat, Pray, Hex. It's the Crescent Moon Mystery Series, number one. Apparently, there are three books in this series, and the third one comes out here in either like a few weeks or a month or so.
Who's the author?
That one is Tara Lush, which I feel like is probably a pen name.
I looked it up on Goodreads. I love the first sentence of the little like blurb. When hot flash prone cookie shop owner Amelia inherits a spooky Florida inn, she plans to sell it fast.
I won't lie, the reason I bought it is because the blurb was paranormal and perimenopausal. Amelia's got double trouble, and I was like, sign me up. I don't know why, but I'm currently in this era. I'm currently in this era where I still love, like we said, the Sarah J. Maas characters, the, like, we all know they're barely 20-somethings, right? But I am currently really loving this idea of heroines, main characters, whatever you want to refer to them as being close to my age and going through like the same daily life things that I would be. I don't know why. It's comforting maybe because you're like, yeah, you too, girl. You too. So honestly, like I won't lie. I saw that and was like, yeah. And apparently this just came out in October. I found this on Instagram, I believe. Another friend of mine who's like, do you want a little bit older heroine? Do you like cozy mysteries? Do you like witches? This is for you. And then I saw that blurb, like I said, and I was like, what? It does say it was given one of the best Florida books of 2023 by Creative Loafing.
The next one in the series, I think, is going to be called Gator Queen.
No, number two is I Want Your Hex.
Okay, well, if you go to her author page, it says Gator Queen, available for request on NetGalley.
Oh, well, that must be... Maybe it's a totally different series. Interesting. Go into NetGalley. I will figure that out. Which NetGalley... Speaking of, because my currently read, okay, so that is a different series because I know you make a list of these, so I will just tell you really quick. That is a different series. This is book one, comes out on March 26th, and it's the Critters and Criminals book, and I think I'm going to need this.
Is that Gator Queen?
Yeah, that's Gator Queen.
I just love that.
And I did not ask her to. Yeah. So that we may have to go there. Listen, y'all, if you're not into cozy mysteries, they are funny. They're a hoot. They're quick reads. Most of them are no more than like 350 pages. The majority of the time, they're more like 270-ish, to be honest with you. That's why I can get through so many, because they're not long. But yeah, so I'm going to go to NetGalley for that. But so for my recent reads, NetGalley has done it again. So, you know, I texted you back around right after Christmas. And I was like, well, apparently I have books to get onto. Got approved for three and didn't even know it, right? So tell me why I log in a couple days ago to post my official review for two of them. One I talked about last time and one I'm about to this time. And they're like, you have two books ready. And I'm like, what? So again, I have two more books I've been approved for now, and I did not get the notifications.
That's odd.
I know, it's very frustrating. So now, another reason why I have not moved on to the Sabrina books is because I don't want my NetGalley. I don't want to lose my NetGalley grading, because that happened to me where I got locked out of my NetGalley account once. And so I had like four books that I knew I needed to like get to, and I legitimately read them, but I couldn't get back in enough time to review them. So it dropped my percentage rating down. And you know, your percentage rating, especially when you're not like a librarian, because you do get the benefit there that I don't.
Yeah.
If you're not an official like librarian or anything, then they heavily, that percentage rating is important. I was so angry. But, I told you guys I wouldn't talk about this book until I finished it. It's called Everything We Never Said by Sloane Harlow. It does have a giveaway that you can enter. It's only for like 8.5 more hours. So this might not be, it might not still be a giveaway by the time our episode airs, but there's possibly, it is. It releases May 28th. I don't like some of the descriptors used for this. So synopsis descriptors are dark romance, high stakes, plot twists abound in this original YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Colleen Hoover. I'll give you some of that. And I did enjoy this book. General synopsis, it's been months since the accident that killed Ella's best friend Haley, and Ella can't stop blaming herself. Now Ella is starting back to school, and everywhere she looks is a reminder of her best friend, including Sawyer, Haley's boyfriend. When Sawyer offers an olive branch, Ella is shocked, but knows she doesn't deserve his kindness. And then the school psychologist requires Haley's closest friends to join him for a grief counseling group. And Ella and Sawyer are then forced together. After a few sessions, they start growing closer until Ella realizes something horrifying. She's in love with her dead best friend's boyfriend. As Ella discovers that nothing Haley told her about Sawyer was true, she also sees something in him that she finds irresistible. Perhaps it's his grief, maybe it's his desire, cut short by tragedy. Or it could be something dark and twisted Ella can't turn away from. This dark romantic thriller is perfect for fans of Colleen Hoover and Laura Nowlin. I have a huge problem with them calling this dark romance because two reasons. One, it's a YA.
That was like dark romance and YA should not be in the same sentence together.
Yeah. One is a YA. Two, the dark quote unquote romance that happens. If I say it's going to completely spoil it. So
Well then don't say it.
Okay. But the dark romance that takes place is also what throws me off about this being YA. I'll just say that. I wrote a very lengthy review doing my best not to spoil anything over on the Goodreads. I gave this book 3.5 stars. I did hit a point in this book where I couldn't put it down because I needed to know how it ended. Obviously, on Goodreads, you can't give 0.5 stars, so I leaned more towards 4. So the copy I got, because a lot of times, Bianca can attest to this, when you get copies from from NetGalley, they may not be in their final, how they would be presented when you actually purchase it. My copy had trigger warnings, and I would assume that the publisher keeps those in there. But in case they don't, it definitely has some trigger warnings. I did say in my review that without spoiling this book, there's a lot of dark that I would not necessarily say is dark romance. I mean, you already know you're dealing with death and grief and teenagers trying to cope with this death and grief. There were some discussions of sexual activities that at first, I'm not going to lie, I was like, wait, are they 16, 17? And then I kind of stopped and thought about it. And really everything that takes place, it's very normal, conversation, sexual conversation / encounter that would happen at that age, if that makes sense. It's not ACOTAR in a YA.
Okay.
No, it's heavy petting and hand things and
yeah
it's so I guess but I don't I'm starting to think that they're allowing more in YA that they did not, although when I was growing up there were some things that were considered YA that was kind of like the wild wild west we should not have been reading. For example, My Darling My Hamburger, you know.
I do not know, and I don't want to know.
No, it was, the quote itself, the title is it's a cutesy thing, but it is a quote unquote kind of a love story, but they deal with there's discussion of abortion, and they're teenagers, they're high schoolers. It was very deep for my, I think I read it at 14.
Hmm.
Yeah, I read a lot of things way before I should have. We've discussed this. I will say the author, like I said, that hit a point in this book where it left me wanting more and I wanted to know. She does throw you a twist at the end that while I figured out, because clearly it is a thriller. It is listed as a YA thriller and thriller is accurate. That's what led me to request this book on Goodreads. I will say, the cover, now that I've completed the entire story, angered me just a tiny bit because there is a very specific flower that is mentioned a couple of times that
once you realize the connection of the flower and how they figure out the quote unquote big bad, because in a thriller, there's always a big bad, right? I don't know why they didn't use that flower on the cover instead of the one they did. I was like, you what? Why would, okay. So whoever the cover artist was, you clearly didn't read the book and you totally missed something here. Mm-hmm. I will say, trigger warning, there is stalking, domestic violence, deep secrets. The dead friend hid a lot from the alive friend. There's childhood trauma. There is discussion of two of our main characters. One lived very well off. And her family, her parents are married. They're very loving. Some other characters in the book did not have a good home situation at all. They're barely scraping by. Their parents work multiple jobs. So it's like, that could bother some people. Cause that's, I don't know. A huge part of plot point to the story though, does have to do with some of the sexual stuff. That's why I'm not sure I feel comfortable with this being a YA.
Yeah.
Maybe new adult. I think if you're into thrillers and you're not bothered by, well, I don't think you would be bothered by the sexual content, to be honest with you. I think you'd be like me and be like, wait, they're teenagers? But overall, I did enjoy this book. I think there's a huge opportunity to have a book two. And if that were to happen, I would be interested in reading what direction she goes in. There's not been any word to say that there will be or anything, but it's closed, kind of like the book that we talked heavily about today, where it could be done, like that's it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, thrillers do that a lot, where they leave it kind of
open. Just leave it open, yeah.
It's closed, but it's open. I think this could make, because I'm thinking about like some of the teen drama shows that we have had, I think this could make an excellent television series. Even if it was just like a one season where it's just a mini series, I think this could make a very gripping television show. So, okay. My hatred is that it should not be YA overall. I think it should definitely make sure the trigger warnings stay. I used to be a person that was like, why do we need trigger warnings? But I now understand why. But I don't agree with it being a dark romance whatsoever. But yeah, that's my finished. I haven't read too much, I'd say, in the last couple of weeks. Just a lot of bureaucratic stuff with my visa.
Yeah, we are recording kind of earlier than usual. That's just mm-hmm. how our schedules have worked out.
So I actually haven't read too much so far. But that's, yeah. Also, listen, I didn't acquire much. Aren't you proud of me?
I am very proud of you. If you want even more content from us, you can find us over on Instagram. We are Bells with Books Podcast. Mm-hmm. The same over on the TikTok. Mm-hmm. If you want to follow me personally, I am at Style and Freak on both Instagram and TikTok. And you can find Miranda at Mom's a Nerd. Mm-hmm. Are you that on TikTok as well? Mm-hmm. Or are you just your name? Okay.
No.
And then Miranda and then Miranda will give y'all an update on what's going on the Place to Be Nation world.
Yeah, we still have the Facebook group. We would love everybody to come join. It's a fantastic little group. We post all of the other podcasts that are in there, that are part of Place to Be Nation and Pop Experience. There's a whole host of like Place to Be Nation families. There's a wrestling feed. I don't remember how many feeds we have now. That's going to sound really bad, but it's 12:30 in the morning, so my brain isn't braining. but it is a fantastic group. There's a lot to be said there. We would love to have more bookie people over there if you do the Facebook groups. I would like to say thank you to everyone. We've had an even more uptick in some of our followers on TikTok. And to hopefully gain a few more, if you have made it this far and you come follow us for the first time on TikTok and you send a message, just say hi. Just say, hey, listen to the pod. Because it's my birthday and I can do what I want.
Yeah, everyone go tell Miranda happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. So at the end of the month, on the 31st, everyone that has... Yeah, I had to stop and think a second. I had to do that little thing in my head. Are there 31 days in March? At the end of the month, for everyone that has messaged me on TikTok, I'll put your name in a little spinny wheel. And I will send you an Amazon gift card to buy you some Kindle books. Let's say $25 Amazon gift card. But you have to come follow us on TikTok and tell me that you are from the actual podcast. Because we do get followers just because I'll comment on something. I'll follow a different book talker and then comment. And then that book talker follows back.
Yeah, that happens to me on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm... Yeah, you gotta message me and tell me, hey, listen to the podcast. So if you made it this far, I know you really want.
And I will include that in our show notes if you're like driving and you're like, crap, I can't do that right now. Come back and read the show notes to be reminded.
If you have ADHD, like our host Miranda, please always read the show notes. Bianca does a fantastic job of making sure every book we discuss, and I do mean every, unless we tell you different, are in the show notes. So thank you to Bianca. Thank you to Place to Be Nation for hosting us. And always keep reading.